Stephen Henniger.
So, it turned out that growing up was a lot trickier than Ozzy and Harriet had led us to believe. Right? See, we were growing up in Midwest City, Oklahoma, which is tucked up next to Tinker Air Force Base, and these were the atomic times. I mean, even our schools were the rockets and the bombers and the jets, but none of us were worried or even real surprised whenever the school bell rang weird. We just grinned. See, usually it rang one long, ordinary ring for recess, but this was a bunch of short ones, and it wasn't a fire drill, okay? Psst. I looked at Bobby, and Bobby looked at me, and psst. Lyndon looked back at Bobby and me, and psst. Stan looked all around, and we grinned. I mean, we knew what this was. We had played this game before. And Miss Sims said, "It's time," and we all scrambled up out of our seats and filed out into the hallway at Westside Elementary to rehearse our salvation. We were so excited, we could have leaped tall buildings at a single bound, we could have flashed through Central City in a split second, but we walked slow and in line, like we had been taught, so no one would get trampled in the panic, you understand? Out in the hall, we stared at the brick wall. I looked at Lenny out of the corner of my eye. I couldn't see what Stan was doing, but Bobby laughed, and Miss Sims said, "This is serious now. All together." Simon says, "Kneel." "Very good, Laura." Simon says, "Head on knees." "That's right, Stanley." Simon says, "Hands over head." Simon says, "Stay." This could save you. No, this could save you from both Oklahoma tornadoes and Russian atom bombs. Because if a tornado came crashing through, tearing up trees and trailer parks, or if the Russians flew over in one of their Badger bombers and dropped an A-bomb on the airbase, which is about a half a mile down the road, this was the safest position for you to be in. Right? Plus, if you look through your legs, you could see the kids across the hall kneeling down with their butts in the air, too. And that was pretty funny. Right? I mean, all our dads worked out at the airbase. Well, actually, a lot of our moms did, too. So I grew up under the flight path of those B-52 Stratofortress. So that F-100 Super Sabre, those planes came in so low that their shadows dashed through our yards and then cut through our baseball games. I once tagged out the shadow of an F-100 sliding in to second base. Pow! Right? We were used to all that. And in the third grade, we knew every statistic. Mickey Mantle, switch hitting outfielder for New York, batting .353 with 52 home runs and 127 RBIs. F-100, single-seat swept-wing fighter, powered by Pratt & Whitney turbojet, cruising speed 417 miles an hour, armed with four 20-millimeter cannons and sidewinder air-to-air missiles. We knew them all. My dog, Noble Guy Henniger, no, he was a beagle. Noble Guy, he would chase those shadows for a split second as they dashed across the yard and in toward the airbase down the road. And in fact, the first time that death passed low over our heads, its shadow slipped through the chain link fence, dashed across the yard, flickered up and over the garage, just like always. And just like always, Noble Guy, he chased that shadow. But it took us a split second to make that identification. First, because we were playing baseball, of course, right? My team was one run behind, so I was worried about that. But second, death looked pretty much like all the other planes that would pass over the house every day. The planes that would first begin to fall out of the sky out over Texas, and then race over the red dirt fields and the rolling hills of Oklahoma, flash over the house and West Side Elementary, and then in over downtown Midwest City with the Rexall drugstore here and the TG&Y Five and Dime down there. Langston's department store was there, and in over the Sky Train Theater. Is that a great name? Sky Train Theater. None of us knew what it meant. Okay, and then finally in Lowe, over that big sign out on the highway in between the base and the town, sign that said Midwest City, America's Model City. So the first time that death passed Lowe, my team was one run behind. I was worried, but we had a guy on base, me. But my brother Bob was at bat. Now, my brother Bob, he was a pretty good batter for a first grader, right? But sometimes he got excited. And when he got excited, he wiggled. No, you've seen it, right? You can't bat and wiggle at the same time. Mickey Mantle didn't wiggle. Willie Mays didn't wiggle. Now, I explain this. Sometimes it helped and sometimes it didn't. But right then, Stan was pitching, so he did the announcing, because we all did our own announcing. And Stan said, "Stan, rubber arm man, steps on the mound. Stan, rubber arm man, checks the runners. Stan, rubber arm man, takes the signal, and the crowd gets quiet." And Bobby yelled, "A lot of them have gone home already." Now, yeah, well, if you could still hear each other when you're playing outside like that, probably was one of those fighter planes going over, like that F-100 I said, or maybe a T-37 fighter trainer, right? But if you couldn't hear well enough to argue whether that last pitch was a ball or a strike and your chest vibrated, it's probably a B-52 Stratofortress long-range bomber. Complement 6, including pilot, co-pilot, ECM, navigator, bombardier, and gunner, powered by 8, count them, 8 Pratt & Whitney turbojets. Cruising speed 500 miles an hour, cruising range Russia, armed with your conventional but probably atomic bombs, hound dog air-to-surface missiles, and 4 50-caliber rear turret machine guns with lock-on radar fire control. I can still do it. But as it happened, Stan could hear just fine, and he said, "Stan, rubber arm man, wishes the first baseman would be quiet. Stan, rubber arm man, spits. Stan, rubber arm man, rocks back, and he throws." Now, home was this bare spot in the clover right behind the house. First base was the corner of the garage. Second base was the corner of the garden. And shortstop was this closed pin on this closed line, halfway in between second and the closed line pole, which was third. And you could shortstop at shortstop if you thought it was too dangerous to go for third, which is what I was doing there. We still thought that we were the ones in charge of the rules, right? So Bobby, he played first, halfway in between first and second. Lyndon played outfield in the garden, halfway in between the okra and the peppers. And my brother Bob took that second strike, got mad, said, "Shoot," hit the plate, wiggled, and started in announcing. He said, "It's a great Oklahoma day. It's a great day for baseball here on Rickenbacker Street. And Bob, the Bob Hinniger, steps up to the plate and the great crowd, and that's when we heard it. None of us had to say anything. It was like we were all still plugged into that radio announcer that spoke with all our voices. And the radio announcer whispered into our brains all at once. He said, "Bobby, that's too low," he said. "Stanley, that sounds like a T-35, pilot, co-pilot, trainee, powered by two Continental turbojets, cruising speed 350 miles an hour, he said. "Coming in over the right field fence," and we all looked up and over, just in time to see the canopy of that T-37 turning end over end on its way down a couple of blocks over, and just in time to see that co-pilot's parachute blossom barely high enough to get down. By that time, the plane was over the house and gone, and it took us a split second to remember the face. And to this day, my brother Bobby and Stan and Lyndon, they all say that when they looked up that day, they could see that pilot's face as he rode that T-37 in, rode it in over Westside Elementary, where we were not crouched in the hallway just then, and in low over the SkyTrain Theater, and then lower over that big sign on the highway said, "Midwest City, America's Model City, noble guy." He chased that shadow. We just stood there looking at each other. Stan said that he had to go home right then, and Lyndon's mom started calling him. My mom came out of the back door, had she had my little sister in her hand, stood right smack in the first base path looking up, and somehow there were papers falling out of the sky. Clipboard had bounced in my neighbor's yard, but the papers fell around us, and everything stopped. Now, that night when my dad got home from work, he said, "You know, that captain held that T-37 up off of us just by strength of will alone." That's all he said. Next day at school, we were kind of quiet, not really sure what to say, until finally somebody said, "Did you see it?" Somebody said, "It crashed." Somebody said it was a T-37, fighter co-pilot trainee, powered by two Continental turbojets. Nobody said that death had passed close enough for us to see a man's face as he rode it in. So you have to understand, right? I mean, even our schools were the rockets and the bombers and the jets. And so the following day, after that one long ordinary ring for recess, we spread out our arms and raced across the playground without resting. Our planes dashed across the blacktop to where the red dirt ball fields opened up and flew on, watching for enemy fighters armed with dirt clods and looking for ants to bomb. And the ball fields fell away and the air grew thin, and we put on our oxygen masks like we'd seen on TV, banked left around the backstop, and headed down the third base line on our bombing run. Those ants never saw us coming because they had terrible radar. And I said, "Roger, this is a B-6535, and I am switching your radar. Over." And Lyndon said, "Roger, B-6535, this is Wilco 8653, and I'm switching your radar too. Over." And I said, "Roger, Wilco, over and out." And he said, "Wilco, Roger, over and out." And I said, "Check, Roger, over and out." And he said, "Check, check, check." And I said, "Jack." And he said, "Mayday, B-6535, mayday, engine failure, over." And I said, "So? You're a B-52. You've got eight." And he said, "No, I'm not. I'm a T-37. Mayday, engine failure, over." And I said, "That's stupid. They don't even have any bombs." And Lyndon said, "Ah!" So, It was the atomic times, but baseball was still king. So I flopped down on third base next to the wreckage of Lyndon. I watched the ants start to crawl up under his collar. I knew something was going to bust loose in a split second. I started to laugh, and for the moment at least, death was a vague disturbance in our lives, like the Russians, like the shadows through our backyards. Thanks. All right. Thank you. Thanks a lot.